Blog Talk Radio.
People think, oh, they don't own a home. They don't yet need a last will because, you know, they don't have to worry about all these assets that need to be distributed. But the truth of the matter is that an estate plan provides guidance for your loved ones who are already experiencing a difficult time. So if something happens to you and you become incapacitated, or if you pass away, when you pass away, your loved ones are already dealing with the trauma of that. Never mind if they don't know what your wishes are.
Welcome and thanks for tuning in to the Midday Money Show, your weekly shot of uncommon financial good tips. I'm Tony Husbands, a financial coach with the Debt Free Divas, and I love talking about all things as they relate to your money. Hello, Spring Debt Free. Spring is definitely in the air, and it really makes me think about spring cleaning. Not that I'm doing that right now, but it still makes me think about adding something important to my to-do list. And speaking of adding important things to your to-do list, I'll have to admit that I don't have yet a will. I don't have a power of attorney, nor do I have a healthcare proxy. Those are all the things that I'm like really convicted about right now after speaking with Rebecca Neal. Why? Because she is the personal finance lawyer. I've wanted to do a show on this topic for some time, and I'm glad I crossed paths with Rebecca because she just broke it down, what we need, when we need it, how we need to get it. She's an attorney who's licensed in Massachusetts and New York, and she specializes in helping families with estate planning. Obviously, that's what we're talking about on the show today. You can find links to all of the resources mentioned on today's episode, Understanding the Basics of Estate Planning, at my website. Just hop over to debtfreedivas.org. Rebecca, thanks for joining me today on the Midday Money Show. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Like I said, I've been meaning to look into this topic for personal reasons, but also I think this is a topic that many of the Team Debt Free community will greatly benefit from. But so let's kind of start at the beginning. Like, what exactly is an estate plan?
Sure. A good estate plan is going to include several things. The first thing people think of is a will, and that is important. It's important to have a last will and testament. It's also important to have things that look after your healthcare decisions if you become incapacitated. So a healthcare proxy is another important piece of an estate plan. Also, you might want to look into having a power of attorney. Many people are familiar with what a healthcare proxy does. They make healthcare decisions for someone who becomes incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
A power of attorney is somewhat similar, except they make financial decisions for somebody who is not able to make those financial decisions at that time, or who is not physically able to come to the bank and sign a form that's necessary, something like that. So a good estate plan, all my estate plan clients walk away with a last will and testament, a healthcare proxy, and a power of attorney. Some people also would benefit from having a trust, and trust can take a gazillion forms for gazillion different reasons.
Okay.
So it's not necessary for every plan.
Okay, so I'm going to come back to that too, because that's actually on my list of things to talk about. But what is a good age then? Because when you're talking about wills and power of attorneys and healthcare proxies, I kind of, you know, that typically puts me in the mind of an kind of a senior citizen or somebody a little bit further along in life. But I'm going to assume that we probably need to have these things in place before senior citizenship. So
yes.
What's a good age where we really need to start thinking about these things and having them in place?
So you're not going to like my answer. My answer is just about any age where you're in charge of your own well-being.
Hmm.
Because the purpose of an estate plan, people think of, you know, they think of they need a guardian appointed for their children if something happens. And yes, that's important. If you have minor children, you'd like to name a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
People think, oh, they don't own a home. They don't yet need a last will because, you know, they don't have to worry about all these assets that need to be distributed. But the truth of the matter is that an estate plan provides guidance for your loved ones who are already experiencing a difficult time. So if something happens to you and you become incapacitated, or if you pass away, when you pass away, your loved ones are already dealing with the trauma of that. Never mind if they don't know what your wishes are. say something happens to you and you become incapacitated, they don't know what you would want to do with your healthcare at that time. It provides them guidance and that provides them peace of mind. So unfortunately for our to-do lists, I think an estate plan is extremely important.
I mean, it kind of seems like you say when you're in charge of your own welfare, like after I'm coming out of college, should I like start creating the basics of an estate plan, at least a will at that point, you know, 23, 24 years old, should I have something? Because at that point, I'm renting, I don't really have a lot of assets, maybe, you know, most of us.
Right.
But should I have an estate plan at this point? Should I start thinking about it that early?
Well, the likelihood of you becoming incapacitated is so much lower at that age.
Okay.
But it is very simple, actually, to have a healthcare proxy done. And many states have forms available that are compliant with their state. And you can find one with a reputable source, a nonprofit, usually has one that you can print and sign in front of a notary, and then you're good to go. In terms of the will, you're right. If you're 24 and you're just coming out of college, it's probably not a big deal to you, unless, of course, you have somebody in your life who would inherit any of your property and you don't want them to get it.
Oh, that's interesting, like a preventative will.
Yes, exactly. Because if you pass on without a will, then the state has particular rules for who is next in line to get your property.
So that kind of sets the foundation. We know what an estate plan is.
Mm-hmm.
Do people with mm-hmm. minor children, is this kind of a must-have? Is this something they should have in place?
I think that it is something they truly should have in place, because here's what happens. You know, I practice in Massachusetts, and so I'm familiar with Massachusetts laws. And every state has different laws on guardianship, except that states require that a court would appoint a guardian for the child. A court needs to oversee that decision. So any guardianship appointment that you want to make in your will is merely a suggestion to the court. And the court takes all the factors into consideration and determines what's the best interest for the child. That's the typical standard.
Okay.
Although state by state, it may vary. So if you think, well, this is just a suggestion to the court, maybe it's not that important. The truth of the matter is, with no suggestion, who is the court going to choose?
Mm-hmm.
So what you want is to inform the court as to the guardian that you would choose for your children. And a secondary issue to this that we don't always think about, because we're not necessarily concerned about our children's financial health, but it's very important to have an estate plan that covers what happens to your funds if your children inherit them before they're the age of 18.
Mm.
In Massachusetts, the children would inherit the funds into a trust, and that trust would expire at 18. And I don't know any parent who thinks that their children should have that kind of asset at their disposal at age 18 with no oversight.
Right.
So they want to establish a trust that provides for a more thoughtful approach to how to handle the funds, at least through the children's college educations.
Do you recommend kind of combining all of this with, say, like you have life insurance, especially families with minor children, they may have life insurance through their job. Should you combine what to do with that life insurance? Who would have, I guess, rights to decide how it should be used? Should all of that be kind of spelled out?
Absolutely. Once you have the trust set up, you would have to go to your insurance carrier, your life insurance carrier, and change the beneficiary instead to, you know, Sally and Joe, my children. You would change it to the trust for Sally and Joe.
Oh, okay.
And that trust is going to have all sorts of provisions about what the money can be spent on, who is in charge of the money, and at what point the money gets transferred to the children without someone looking over their shoulder as a trustee.
Okay.
Yeah. And that provides a lot of peace of mind to people, because I know that some parents think, I would really like for my sister to take care of my children, but I don't want to be a financial burden on them.
Mm-hmm.
You have a life insurance policy that names your children as the trust beneficiaries of your policy, then that provides a lot of peace of mind that you're not putting a burden on your sister, for example.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that someone's sister would be thrilled to be able to provide the love and care that you can't, and then you can rest assured that the financial aspect will be taken care of.
A lot of people that are listening to this show are working really, really hard at freeing themselves from debt. So if I am in debt, if I don't really have any assets maybe other than, say, my house, or maybe a 401k or something like that. I've started contributing to my 401k. If I don't really have much in the way of assets, should I be worried about this at this time? Or is this something that once I start to accumulate, you know, a decent or significant amount of cash and savings and stocks, then I should worry about that?
So the power of attorney is really useful if something happens to you, obviously, but you haven't passed. And you're unable to manage your 401k, you're unable to maintain your home because, for example, if you're in a long-term care facility, then if somebody that you trust, maybe a spouse or a parent, has this power of attorney, then they can maintain those things for you.
I see. That you give them permission to act in your behalf.
So, for example, if they need to write checks, I mean, nobody writes checks anymore. Honestly, you could just give somebody your password to your online accounts, and that's going to take care of 90% of those issues, like paying utility bills and things like that. But when it comes to retirement accounts, I know those companies are not going to talk to anybody except you unless they have a copy of a power of attorney on file.
Okay, I understand that. Yeah. So will was probably what I was more thinking about.
Yeah.
So
That's a really interesting question, because if you're married, then you probably own your home jointly with your spouse.
Right.
And in that case, you don't need probate to say who gets the house, in which case you don't need a will, right?
Okay.
Your 401k, your retirement accounts, your life insurance accounts, they all have beneficiaries designated within that policy. So you don't need a will to say who gets your money if you pass. Who gets your retirement account if you pass.
Okay.
Now, for those assets you don't own jointly, that's where a will is going to say who gets what. Now, what are those? Maybe your car, maybe some bank accounts you hold individually. And in that case, it's important.
But this seems that you brought up a good point, then. This seems very important then for people who are not married, for single people that have homes and other assets.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially if you don't have children.
Yes. If you play out the scenario of I don't have children and my parents are no longer alive, then, you know, it's going to your siblings. And if you don't have siblings, then who does it go to? It goes to, like, your second cousin first removed or something.
That's real interesting.
Yeah. So this whole line of kind of succession is called intestate succession. And each state has their own chart for it, and you can trace it and see who ends up with it. And if you don't like the answer, then you might want to consider instead, you know, what charity do you want to give your property to?
That's interesting. So those are some things to think about. Now, with the power of attorney, I want to kind of flip it and think about, like, not necessarily for dependents, but maybe for parents.
Yes.
Do you have any suggestions on how to broach that conversation with parents? Because I know, first of all, end of life discussions are not necessarily the most right to talk about, but there are things, I guess, that you want to deal with and get out of the way before you actually need to have them or before that time comes upon you. So what are some suggestions you have to kind of broach those conversations with parents to make sure we have these things in place, or without being, like, nosy or pushy, you know?
There's such a fine line we walk when we're at an age where our parents are aging and, you know, we're probably going to be responsible for either caring for them, caring for their finances while they are being cared for in a facility, and looking after their will, things like that. I don't have a magic bullet, but I do suggest that when parents bring it up, their children are open to the conversation and do all that they can to assist in the process. With the power of attorney, I think that is extremely important for aging parents to have in place. They may want to give it to their spouse, which is, you know, totally fine. And you would encourage them to have that power of attorney in place for that names their spouse. And also a healthcare proxy is vitally important, particularly before any kind of planned medical intervention. Make sure that they have a proxy on hand, and that might provide also another opportunity to have a discussion about the power of attorney and where their will is located, which is another challenge sometimes, is locating where that original will is when it was executed back in 1979 or something like that.
Okay.
Right?
Right. We're kind of talking about like the nuts and bolts, but like thinking practically, what are some characteristics of a person that you should think about to choose to be one of these guardians in terms of your healthcare? And if you don't just have like a spouse, what are some characteristics that you would say people should think about in terms of identifying somebody to name?
Sure. And I would think of it as, sometimes I have clients who kind of confer this power as sort of an honor, or sort of, you know, well, I have to make so-and-so my power of attorney because, you know, my other child is my healthcare proxy or something like that. And they look at it as like they want to be even in delegating responsibility. But I discourage that, because what you want is somebody who has some different skill sets for each one. So the healthcare proxy, typically people like to identify somebody who has medical knowledge, mm-hmm. or who they have seen already endure kind of a medical crisis with a loved one, mm-hmm. and they have handled it well. Mm-hmm. That person also needs to be available at the touch of a phone. And they should be local, because they're going to need to be on the ground at a moment's notice if something urgent happens.
I was going to ask if they could be like long distance, because like how families are all spread out now, but yeah. They should be local. Okay, that's a good point.
Ideally, I mean, none right. of our lives are ideal, right?
Right, so, right.
So if that's who you have to put, somebody in California, as long as, you know, they answer their phone and they are aware that they're the proxy and that may happen someday, you know, that's fine. But ideally, you want somebody who can be on the ground. With the power of attorney, I also find it ideal that that person lives in the state, so they're familiar with state rules on certain issues, particularly with real estate transfers, because those vary so much from state to state. Mm-hmm. And also they have access to local attorneys who can help, or local financial managers. And so someone who would be a power of attorney is somebody who's responsible with money and understands that it's your money and not theirs.
Right.
because that is a pretty powerful power to give them. Mm-hmm. I actually advise my clients to keep all of their copies of their power of attorney in their house, mm-hmm. and just tell the person that they've designated, say, well, it's in my house if you need it. And okay. so that way it's not going to get abused. I mean, obviously this is not somebody you think is going to abuse that power in the first place.
Uh-huh.
Give it to them, but just as a safety precaution, that's what I tell
them. Good point. These are services that you definitely provide for clients. What are some of the examples of some of the costs for setting these things up?
Sure. I decided to put my fees right up on my website. Not a lot of attorneys do that. And for the package of three estate planning items, the healthcare proxy, the power of attorney, and the will, I charge $900. But then people can save money if they come in as a couple, and I charge $1,100 for that, because it really saves me time if you come in at the same time. And usually I just wind up changing a few names in the same kind of document. But I would expect to pay, depending on where your listeners live, I would expect to pay at least $600 for a thoughtful estate plan that covers those three basic needs.
Okay.
There are some ways to save money. And so a lot of people ask me, oh, should I go with one of these online companies like LegalZoom?
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell them is, you get what you pay for. I've read a lot of reviews of these services, and the truth of the matter is that there's room for human error. There's a reason why lawyers go to law school for 3 years and then practice. And when you're not sure what your language is going to do, and then you change the language in that LegalZoom will or the form that you buy from Staples, it can get confused.
Okay.
And you only have one chance to get it right. It's hard.
Now, let me ask you this. Is this one of those things where once you do it once, you pretty much have it set unless there's some kind of major life changes? Because I'm wondering, like, okay, once you get divorced, do you need to, let me not say it like that. Like, if, you know, right. if something like that were to happen, if you're married, you need to go back through it and redo all of these things. Is it kind of like once you've done it, it's done and just put it up and you have it?
Well, the truth is, it's one of those things on our to-do list that really weigh heavily on us. At least, I know this feeling. And once you get it done, it feels so good. And you can just set it and usually forget it.
Okay.
If you get divorced, the divorce rules vary by state. In Massachusetts, if you get divorced, your separation agreement will probably say that you're soon to be ex-spouse, disclaims all claims to your estate. And then your estate planning documents will read as though that person is not in there. So it'll
okay.
just cut that person out and it'll go to, for example, the next person on the list. Say you have, you know, I leave everything to my spouse, and if he doesn't survive me, then I leave everything to my children. It'll just jump straight to your children.
Okay.
Yeah. But when you do get divorced, what happens is people have children from their first marriage and then they get married again.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a crucial time to establish a new estate plan, because you don't want your children feeling like your new husband is going to get their inheritance, because most state laws would provide for that. You know, your second husband gets the inheritance and the children don't, because that's the stepfather.
Okay.
So they wouldn't get it when he passed. It gets a little complicated.
Very so. Okay.
And that's why you hire the attorney to figure those things out.
Gotcha. Well, this has been super informative, Rebecca. Thank you so much for your time. Now, if anybody wants to find out a little bit more about what you do, look at some of that information that you have on your website, where can they contact you online?
Sure. They can go to thepersonalfinance.lawyer. It's not .com.
Yeah, that's an interesting
but I like it. And I have a contact form on there and my phone number, and I'm happy to work with people who live in Massachusetts.
Again, this is something on my to-do list that I need to button up and tighten down, and I just wanted to put that out there for the rest of Team Debt Free. If this is not something that has kind of come across your radar. So thank you again, Rebecca.
It's a pleasure.
So I posted a quick question to Facebook the other day regarding this. And I was just curious who had a will. And there were a lot of people that came back with it. They did. So kudos to you all for being on top of your business. And my mom, yes, my mother chimes into Facebook. She said, she raised the question. She was trying to be funny, but it's a good question. And she's like, well, who wants to know? And that is something I think that I just want to encourage you all. Number one, we need to know these things. And number two, we need to communicate that we have these things in place, where to find these things. I like Rebecca's suggestion about, okay, let's get it in place, get them signed, but keep it at your house. Just in case, you know, you need to change something or relationships change, or either way, I hope you have been convicted, as was I, if you are not yet in possession of these at least these three documents, in terms of thinking about wealth building, thinking about wealth preservation, thinking about how dependents, if you have them, will be cared for in the event that you are no longer able to do so. So it was a great episode. Again, head over to debtfreedivas.org if you need to find out more information about how to get in touch with Rebecca, you want to reach out to her, have her answer some of your questions, or just peruse her site. Again, that is thepersonalfinance.lawyer. Interesting URL. Hopefully it'll stick with you. We are out of time, but definitely never out of topics. Until we speak again, you all have a great money week.